from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
In part two of our Barry Weimiller series, David Pickersgill, Senior Outreach Program Leader at BW, discusses his role in educating a variety of businesses, government agencies, and other organizations on the principles of truly human leadership.
So welcome to part two of the Barry Weimiller series of the GC Podcast. We have David Pickersgill with us.
Hello. Good to be with you.
And excited to talk about some of the stuff that you do. Obviously, as you mentioned previously to me privately, Bob has the vision, right? And you are in part on the implementation side, right? And kind of mm-hmm. carrying out that vision. Mm-hmm. So what's your role at Barry Weimiller, and how does that play out?
So my role is Senior Outreach Program Leader, which is a job title that, like many job titles, doesn't tell you very much. And you said before that Bob is the person who has the vision. He, 20 years ago, received, as he would describe them, a set of revelations, which has set our company on a completely different trajectory. And it's all about caring leadership. His vision is that business can change the world. It could be the most powerful force for good in the world if leaders would accept the responsibility to care for people entrusted to them. And we believe that that's true. We believe that business isn't just this thing that exploits people and is extractive and destroys the planet, but actually can be a source of great character growth and real deep satisfaction. And the key element is how leaders treat the people in their span of care. Yeah. But the other thing, as I think you'll hear on the other part of the podcast with Bob Chapman, is that you can't just tell people to care. You need to equip them and teach them to care. And so that's my role in the business and outside as well. I'm responsible for, our learning and training department. I'm responsible for webinars, so live virtual learning across the organization. We run webinars every week and special customized sessions for people across our business, across North America and across the world. And then in colleges and universities, we do this work with staff and faculty and with students to inspire them that this kind of leadership and organization is possible based on the Barry Weimiller story and experience, and to give them the skills. So lots of the things we teach are common across both places. We're able to bring to colleges and universities and to students the same things that have worked at Barry Weimiller to build this culture of care and to train our leaders and bring them into university environments. And it's a great pleasure. When I was at college, it was always great to hear from people who were practitioners, as well as the people who knew the theory and had the great academic skills. It was such a refreshing thing when people came in and could say, well, it's what your lecturers are saying, what the people teaching you are saying, that's actually true because we put it into practice and we have the experience. So it's so good to partner with universities and colleges like Gonzaga to be able to achieve that mission and to build up the leaders of tomorrow with the vision to be able to care for others and the skills to be able to care for others.
And I forgot to mention, David wanted to go to Gonzaga, couldn't get in, so he had to go to the University of Cambridge instead as a fallback school.
So. That's true. I studied Cambridge, and I actually was at seminary at Cambridge. So I trained to be a pastor in the Church of England, and then later on went back to school at Nottingham University. I want to call out Nottingham as well. That's another great university to get my master's in psychology. So I got both of those. And it's interesting to feel this alignment between the work that I've done previously in pastoral ministry, that ministry of caring for people, and this ministry of training up leaders. It feels like they feel really in harmony with each other. When I was back in the church, I would have said, well, the world is divided between the caring people, the nurses and doctors and firefighters and people like me and nonprofits and religious organizations. We're the ones with a vocation. We're the ones caring for people. And then you've got those shifty people in business, those, you know, white guys who are just out to make money. You can't really trust them. They've sold out. They're not doing anything good in the world. It's been really interesting. Now that I'm working in business, I encounter so many people who are wanting to make the world a better place. And I include both of you in this conversation, but in colleges and universities, and at Barry Weimiller, and course, there are definitely, we know about, we hear the stories of those people who enter business and they are stepping on other people in order to make money. And all they care about is their own ego. And they're happy to treat people any kind of terrible way if it's advantageous to them. But my experience is actually there are probably more people who do want to make a positive difference in the world. And many of them inspired by their faith as well. In a way, when I was in the church, I would see people in church on a Sunday and they'd be like, well, you're here in church. Sometimes you don't treat each other that well. Sometimes you're
Right.
not. But then it feels like I've met more people inspired by their faith and by the Christian faith out here in business and in the working world than I saw in the church. So that's a great joy and exciting thing
Yeah,
for me as
we
well.
have a handful of faculty in the business school who, and the term they use is business as a calling. And very, yeah, and very similar to the concept that you guys employ of business is a force for good in the world. And when you really think about it, you're not going to have certain medical treatments and a lot of these things that are saving lives and improving lives without business. And so I forgot to introduce my colleague, Associate Dean Chris Stevens. And you can interrupt me anytime you want, sir.
I don't need
Let's
to. You're
go
doing
ahead.
a great job.
So, and I also want to let you know, my mom's Episcopalian, so I have an affinity for the
Oh,
Church
that's
of England.
wonderful.
That's our
Wonderful.
version. That's our version of the Church of
Wonderful.
England.
That's great. That's great. I work with a lot of Catholics, and I kind of say that Episcopalians were kind of Catholic, but we're kind of squonky Catholics, I think.
Catholic
If you
light,
squint a
maybe.
little bit,
That's right.
Squonkies, that's a British
Okay.
term.
Excellent. I like that.
Squonky Catholics.
Okay.
So we'd like to think of ourselves as very aligned with Catholicism, and lots of the traditions are there. And actually, I joined the Episcopal Church in England. It's called the Church of England, partly because it continues. I won't go into the history of it, but it's kind of this historical accident where it's possible to be Catholic and Protestant at the same time, some people would say. And so it holds a lot of the Catholic traditions and theology and sees itself as having this continuation back to the Roman Catholic Church entering the United Kingdom back in with Anselm of Canterbury, I think in the 1100, no, the hundreds, the 111 or sometime around there. So it's really ancient kind of
I can't tell the
continuous
difference
thing.
between the mass.
No,
It's like
exactly.
same drill.
Yeah,
So
wonderful.
okay, and so you guys are working with a lot of organizations and institutions. I mean, you're traveling all the time. How's this working? I know you're doing some stuff virtually. Like, give us an idea of, I don't know, some of the work you're doing, some of the specifics. You mentioned Fordham and a couple other schools already.
So the way that we tend to work is we work with students, but we don't just want it to be kind of a hit and run thing. It would be possible for us to, arrange loads and loads of classes just to talk to students. And that would be good. That would be, it would be fun. I really enjoy teaching students. And when we get to do that, it's a great gift and a great opportunity. But if we did that, we would come, we would give students this class, and hopefully they'd feel inspired and excited, and some of them would want to do this, and then they go through the rest of their education and never hear that message again. And then we'd have to go back the next year and teach the next students, and maybe we'd get an hour with them or a day with them. The ethics lecture, I think it was 3 years ago now, and that was the start of our partnership and our coordination. And we've now been able to we've brought some of our learning and our teaching and our culture building classes to everyone, all the staff and faculty at the School of Business Administration. And it was great to work with both of you and be to have you part of those cohorts as I and my colleague Brian were leading those. And so that's really the way we want to work. We find other universities, other institutions that have a shared vision, and we're able to bring some of our wisdom and some of our skills to build that culture of care, the same culture of care that we have at Barry Wavell, and contribute to that and help. We find people of peace who are passionate about that and help them to To build that culture within their departments as it exists already, where there's that kind of fertile ground, so that students feel it when they come through the door, maybe even before they've had a class, even before they've started that formal learning, they understand that this is a place that is cares for them and wants and places care as a premium, care and leadership as a premium in that education. And as I say, this is something that Gonzaga has been doing for many, many years back into its history. And I think the Jesuit foundations and the alignment with the Jesuit vision is all part of that. And it's been so so great, again, to bring this thing of we're not experts. Sometimes I feel pretty humble that I want to be like, hey, you know, you guys all have PhD and some of you have tenure and stuff. And I'm like, wow, it's so humbling to be able to bring this. But to bring it from the perspective of, yeah, and this does work. This is solid foundations. This is stuff that's worked in this organization, a prosaic organization. We make pretty like down-to-earth stuff, like putting the dots in kitchen paper and making the boxes that your Amazon orders come in, that kind of thing. But it works in our organization. So we found that it works in other places as well.
Kitchen paper napkins? Was that there?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Is that what you call them?
Yes.
Yes. Kitchen. Yeah. But napkins. Yeah. The dotty thing that you need to wipe up.
Yeah. No. No.
Exactly. That. Exactly.
I like it. Yeah. We're all about speaking the King's English.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's a reason it's called. There's a reason it's called English. You know. That's exactly
true. That's true.
Yeah.
So you have you bring, as you reflected already, you bring this really interesting background to this role at Barry Waymiller with your deep roots in faith and pastoral care.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me on Monday night when we listened to your CEO, Kyle Chapman, talk about his vision for the shared vision for where Barry Waymiller goes in the future and missioning our students. He said, hope is not a strategy. You have to demand this of the organizations that you're in. You have to demand that they recognize human values, that they recognize the individuals who are part of the organization. I want to turn that to what should businesses be doing? What are practical things that you've seen as you come into this context,
mm-hmm.
bringing a lens about how to care for people?
Mm-hmm.
That you think that most businesses can start doing today?
Mm-hmm. So the foundation of our culture, there's two things. One is listening, the other one is recognition. Beginning with recognition, if I was like one of those internet banner adverts that you see when you're on like websites and it's like, what's the one weird trick? Grandmother finds this one weird trick to whatever it is, look 10 years younger. If I was one of those, I would say there is one weird trick that you can use to instantly transform culture. And that would be to begin every meeting with time for recognition.
Mm.
That's what we do at Barry Waymiller. Every regular meeting, even some ad hoc meetings, we'll start and we'll say, hey, look, anyone got any recognition for anyone else? And people share, hey, this person really helped me out when I was in a pinch and they gave me extra time that they didn't need to do. And it meant that I could hit this deadline and I wasn't going to hit it. Or the quality of this work that this person did was just, it was just brilliant. It was over, it was far beyond what I was expecting. And I'm really grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And it does so many things to transform the culture. First of all, if you're going into a meeting, sometimes you go into a meeting and people go in and they're a little bit hot and maybe there's something they're feeling a certain way about, they're feeling a bit anxious or frustrated. But it's hard to maintain that kind of like emotional temperature when someone's just said something real nice about you, about like how much they appreciate you. And so it starts you off on this really positive footing. And also it serves as this connector between people that people feel this appreciation from each other, and it builds team and it builds connection with each other. So it's super simple, just beginning meetings with regular recognition. We do recognition in a number of other ways as well. We've got business-wide recognition programs and things to recognize people that they may only get kind of once in a career, but fundamentally making people know, helping people to understand the positive impact they're having is really, really powerful. So number one is recognition. The other one is listening. And Otto Sharma at MIT, who is head of the Theory U project there, he talks about listening as the most underrated business skill. And I read a research paper a little while ago that was saying that listening is the most effective skill, far more effective than giving presentations or writing reports. Actually listening is the key differentiator of great leaders in business. And guess what? It's the one that's taught on so rarely. We just assume, as and your listeners may have heard that story of our leaders going to Bob Chapman 20 years ago when Bob started talking about a culture of care. Some of our leaders, including my leader, Brian Wellinghoff, who I work with closely, he went to Bob Chapman and said, we need to teach people how to listen. And Bob said, that's ridiculous. Why would we need to teach adults how to listen? But he trusted them. He trusted these people who were leaders in the organization. And they put together this curriculum on listening. And now all of our leaders go through a 2-day listening and communication skills class. It's a prerequisite for leadership. And it teaches people the skills of expressing empathy and understanding another person's viewpoint, not necessarily agreeing with it, but understanding and validating that viewpoint and being able to reflect back the emotions that someone else is saying. Because sometimes emotions are really important, and understanding that is a key to driving change. And it's really difficult if you are. If you want to express care for someone, it's really difficult to do that without listening to someone. If someone doesn't feel listened to, it's really hard for them to feel that sense of care. And the converse is true as well. It's hard to overlook someone or for someone to feel like you're not really valuing them if you are deeply listening to them and understanding them. And so listening and recognition, they're the two things I would say are fundamental.
As you guys, so Barry Windmiller is built on a historic legacy of acquisition and adaptation with the organizations that become part of its family. 150 firms at this point, 12,000 employees. And one of the things that I've constantly been bouncing around in my head that I kind of wanted an answer to is as you come into a new organization, an organization that's been acquired, that's part of the BW community. How do you introduce these concepts to people who've perhaps never been exposed to them before?
There's a great story in our book, Everybody Matters, the new little plug, the 10-year anniversary edition is coming
Coming
out
out
just
next
now.
week.
Yep, next week, next week. It's probably like in the past now. If you listen to this a year after it came out like a year ago and is now a number one bestseller, hopefully. There's this great story about a guy called Randall Fleming. And he was a machine operator in, I think it was in one of our Sheboygan, in our Sheboygan plant, so somewhere up in Wisconsin. And Barry Waymiller took ownership of the company that he'd been working for a number of years. And they came in, we came in and started talking about all these ideas about care for other people and everybody matters and listening. And he was at a point in his life he didn't want anything to do with that. He was not interested at all. And he just wanted to come to work and do his work and keep his head down. And he was a big guy. He'd been, he worked out a lot. He was like a motorbiker. And whenever anyone came up to him and, these new employees representative of the company, there's a particular guy called Ken Coppins who worked in that plant. It was his job to kind of bring some of this culture in. He would just grunt, an angry kind of grunt, a go away kind of thing, really clearly, non-verbally and verbally sending the message. He didn't want anything to do with this. And this guy, Ken, just kind of chipped away at him and carried on like expressing care through his demeanor, through, hey, how are you doing today? Like giving the opportunity to listen, giving the recognition when it was due, and kind of just wore him down with kindness until something flipped in Randall. And this is one of the interesting things. You can read about Randall Fleming in the book, and I read about it in the book before I started working at Barry Waymiller. And I've been around people who've written books before, and I'm like, I know that you exaggerate things, never let truth get in the way of a good story. And I'm like, yeah, that's what it says, but what is it like? Well, I got to meet Randall Fleming as I'd been after I'd been in the organization for about a year, and he was one of the loveliest like human beings you would ever meet. Like literally, like some real warmth and goodness shone out from him. And if you hear his story, obviously I never met him before he went through this experience, but if you hear his story, he would say about himself that he was really a bit of an ornery character, and he was not such a nice guy. And so really having faith that we're connecting with something fundamental in human beings, that human beings want to be seen, that human beings really do matter. By the way, when we say everybody matters, we're not saying you matter because you work at Barry Waymiller. We are saying that each individual human being has this real value to them. And we just want to draw that out and express that. We want people to feel it when they come to work at Barry Waymiller. And given time, we think that people will respond to that, and it will enable people to grow and become all that they're supposed to be in the workplace.
Yeah, it sounds like, and you may have answered this, or I might be answering it myself, but you said a culture tone that leads to, I don't want to use the word conflict avoidance, but reduce conflict. And I think it takes some time, right? If you're transforming something like any kind of transformation. What about a customer's mad at me, or a student's upset with me, or the dean's upset with me? How does it play out in kind of a shorter term interaction where blood pressure's up?
Okay, so great question. And this is something I think is a bit of a people can get the wrong impression. And this is, I was just talking with some students here at Gonzaga about this. We talk about care and accountability being in harmony with each other. So when you hold someone to account, you are actually expressing care for them. I have two daughters, they're wonderful kids. And if I let them just watch as much TV as they ever wanted to do, I'm sure that might they might feel pretty good about that in the short term. But that would not be care for them. Real care is saying, it's time to do your homework, it's time to brush your teeth and get ready for bed. That's an act of care, whether or not they want to do it in the moment. And so actually at Barry Waymiller, we don't confuse care with being nice. We don't think that true care means avoiding conflict or being agreeable. And we do the opposite. A real key part of our training is how to give feedback to people in a way that is actually caring. We talk about having that radical candor that Kim Scott talks about, having those crucial conversations, because it's not some of those things that you talk about in terms of where your blood pressure is rising. Sometimes that's because people have avoided a conflict that needed to happen. People haven't actually owned up and said the difficult things. And one of the things that Kyle Chapman, who is our CEO, just taken over from Bob, his dad, who was CEO for 50 years. Kyle Chapman says very much it's that bad news is not bad, it's just news. When you go into office, it's really interesting to see we have these mission control rooms in our facilities. And as part of our lean processes, every morning they will meet and they will put up. They'll keep track of where all the projects are. And I remember going into, I think it was our facility in Loveland in Colorado, and seeing this mission control room. And people would be really clear about whether things were in the red or in the green. And it would be down to the extent of like, well, we are going to deliver this project on time, but we didn't deliver this part, we didn't receive this part on time, so we're going to keep this red. And this real honesty about let's be clear about what is good and what's not good, and be honest about it. And that's the best way to have the most healthy kind of relationships.
So what kind of infrastructure you have to have in place to make that work?
Say more about that.
Well, because I think that Kyle and I had a similar conversation last night about, and this was particularly about healthcare benefits and about holding people accountable for their own health. And one of the things that we were talking about in that conversation is that a lot of organizations just feel like the confrontation, the management of the process, tracking it, working back with people, that infrastructure is just not worth the cost, right? That it's easier to just avoid that problem, have good benefits, hope that people do the right thing, right? If in an organization where truth telling is important, particularly I think in these organizations that you're attempting to transform as you're going into it, what are the changes that need to happen from an infrastructure standpoint to support that? Beyond sort of just a general expectation of radical candor, because we know that generally speaking, people don't engage in that unless they feel like they're supported to do so.
Yeah, And so I'd say a couple of things. There's two different ways to address that question. One is that those getting the infrastructure right is really important. It's no good to say that you care about people, and then you don't put it into practice in actually the way that you do healthcare and benefits and all that kind of thing. And so we do have a considerable team looking across the organization. One of the things we're looking at the moment is pay equity and making sure that that men and women are paid equally and that people aren't outside of the ranges. No one's paid way above their the market rate for pay. We do calibrate our pay based on the market, our compensation based on the market. No one's paid significantly under the market. And so it does take time and effort to do that, but we think it's worth those resources. And there's another element to it as well. And I think when you are in an organization which is really healthy and which is succeeding and where fundamentally you respect and honor people's human dignity, I think that you have real conversations about that and not made up conversations about that. And I was in like I said before, I was a pastor in the church, and in the Church of England, every diocese has like they're called a canon lawyer. It's like I guess over here you call it like a general counsel or something, a legal advisor to the diocese. And there's all these rules in the church, and it's kind of archaic because it's been around for thousands of years. And I remember talking to this canon lawyer for our diocese, just having a conversation with her, and was talking about, well, what do you do when people ask you about a particular rule, or maybe it's something kind of arcane or quite difficult to interpret? And she said, interpret. And she said, there's always been something that's gone wrong at a relational level whenever I get a call like that. Whenever someone is trying to drill down, well, this rule says this, but what about this minutiae of the thing? What about this edge case? And yeah, but what about, and we're having this real conflict. Whenever any organ, and I think it's true of churches and universities and businesses as well, that when people are really digging in and in some kind of really difficult conflict over something that seems to be practical, but is not that, like, well, is it 1% or 2%? Well, are we going to increase this by, what's the holiday? What's the healthcare? And these entrenched arguments about things that really are quite small. It shows some kind of breakdown in relationship and specifically in trust. And in many of the organizations that we've adopted, many of the institutions we've adopted, they've come with a union as part of that facility, and that's great. We work well with the unions, and sometimes there's been a history of the unions just digging in and not agreeing to anything. But by bringing our culture, by saying, look, we can succeed if we work together, and by the way, we do care about you as individuals, it really does help. We have great relationships. I don't want to say every union, but I think the vast majority of places where we have unions, in Germany, where we have workers' councils, we're able to get positive traction on things because ultimately people feel a sense of care and there is a sense of trust.
I did some reading this summer on, I wonder what was called the five personality types you want to avoid. Some positive stuff, right? And it talked about what they refer to as high conflict personalities, or sometimes called toxic personalities. Does this approach work on everybody? Or are there some people just not willing to play?
I would say we always intend. Brené Brown has that great quote about, all I know is that my life is better when I assume that people are trying to do their best. So and Bob Chapman talks about if people don't get it the first time, the bus will come around again and again and again. At the same, my own understanding of the world, and this is David Pickersgill's understanding rather than a Barry Wehmiller like official philosophy of it. But I think there are a minority of people who find it difficult to self-regulate their own behavior, who don't see when they're crossing lines or crossing boundaries, and are willing to step on other people. Perhaps those people who they can't take feedback because their own egos are too sensitive, and if they're challenged or confronted on things, they will just lash out and respond. Very small minority of people in the world. One of the things that we do is we do really hold people to account. And there are people who've been leaders in our organization who have been able to deliver great results, but they do it at the expense of people, and we invite them to move on. They don't continue in
Sure.
leadership. We don't give those people platforms. And so again, this is not about being nice. This is not about like making everyone feel good about themselves all the time, no matter what's happening. Actually, we select leaders who are able to do accountability with care.
Interesting. I mean, sometimes the best thing you can do for the organization and for that individual is coach them another direction, right?
Yeah.
So.
And do that with care and fulfill responsibilities to them. Yeah, with all of that in mind. Yeah.
Interesting.
What is the most enjoyable thing about your job?
I realized a while ago, so I was in ministry and then I felt like it was time to move on. And I was having this conversation with my wife and I was like, maybe I don't know, maybe I could be a therapist or something. And she was like, David, you don't even really like talking to people. I was like, I mean, I do. I love people. I love talking to people. But it's true that the thing that I really loved about being in that position of pastoral ministry was being able to bring together some ideas and some thoughts and communicate them in a way that was engaging to people to help them to grow. And I really do think that's the most, that's what I enjoy mo doing most of all. You may know that expression. Someone I read online a while ago, like, if you want to be a lead, if you want to make people happy, don't be a leader, sell ice cream. Because being a leader always involves some kind of discomfort, like
Right.
selling
Yeah.
ice cream to
Yep.
everyone.
Yep.
But I kind of feel like my role is a little bit like selling ice cream. And you may feel the same way. I'd be interested to know, as educators, people love learning. We as human beings, we love to learn things and we love to grow and to develop. So to be able to connect with people and bring them things that are going to help them to succeed is just such a pleasure and such a joy.
Yeah, and I would say the vast majority of people have the inclination or they get pleasure from teaching, mentoring, things like that.
Exactly.
And I mean, it's cliche to say, but you actually learn more as the teacher, I feel like, at the
Absolutely.
end of the
Yeah.
day. So
Yeah.
yeah. So, and how did you end up? How did you find your way to Barry Wehmiller?
That is a story. I got my job at Barry Wehmiller by pulling a dead chipmunk out of a swimming pool.
Okay. All right.
So we moved to the US. My wife's from America, and I was finishing up my degree in psychology. And I took an afternoon off and took my kids to this pool party at a friend of a friend's house. And I got there, and the mum who was there was really freaking out because she'd invited this really polite English family over, and there was this dead rodent just bobbing up and down in the pool filter. She's trying to get it out with a tennis racket. It wasn't working. I did the chivalrous thing and I leant down and picked it up with my bare hands and put it in a bush. Anyway, I must have made a good impression on her because a little while later, I'd finished my degree and I was now looking for the work that I was going to do in America. And I met her at my niece's birthday party. And she introduced me to her husband. And she said, you need to give David, put him in touch with someone at your firm. I said, well, what firm do you work for? He said, Barry Wehmiller. And I just that week heard about Barry Wehmiller for the first time, seen them online, filled an application online. I said, oh, I've just filled an application for your company. What do you do there? And he said, well, I'm the CFO. So that was a helpful coincidence. You never know who you're going to help out. And I said to him, his name's Mike, and I said, well, look, Mike, they say all this stuff on the internet. This guy, this funny guy, Bob, he says that it's like a really caring firm, and it's all just marketing stuff, really, isn't it? It's not really like that. And he's like, no, it actually is a caring firm. And he came from GE, that you might be aware has a very different kind of philosophy and culture. And he was like, no, it really is a caring firm. So that was how I got my introduction to the work that I do now, and it all went from there.
Fantastic.
So I'm very grateful to that chipmunk for giving up its life so
Now,
I
this
could
might
live
be
again.
one of the most important questions I
Okay.
gotta ask you.
All right.
What's your football club?
I will say, to be honest, I always feel slightly embarrassed when people in America ask me about soccer because I don't follow it closely enough. And
Okay, all right,
some
that's
people will
fair.
like
That's
bring it up,
fair.
but I've always said Manchester United. My mum is from Manchester,
Okay,
so I've always said
gotcha.
Man United, and they're not doing so well at the moment. But obviously, yeah, if you'd
I don't
me,
feel bad for him.
No,
I
okay.
don't.
Okay.
He's a
What?
Chelsea fan.
Oh,
Guy.
okay. Yeah.
And I'm really a Pulisic fan, and he was at Chelsea for a while. And so
Yeah.
now we have alma maters. He's in my house.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know how many of those people are, but
Okay, all right.
yeah. So
He's a decent American
good.
player. So,
They're in
yeah.
Tottenham, so it doesn't really matter.
No.
Every year's kind of middle
Yeah,
pack.
it's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Staying
Yeah, it's just
just
fine.
inside the
It's just
Champions
fine.
League or just
We're
out.
not going to be relegated, but we're also not going to win.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. We appreciate you joining us. Appreciate the visit to Gonzaga once
My
again.
pleasure. Always great to be up here.
Yeah, and I think I can speak for Chris saying we look forward to working with you guys in the
Thank
future.
you.
So
Wonderful.
yeah.
That's
Cheers,
great.
David.
Thank you
Yeah.
so much. We're shaking hands with the benefit of those
Yeah,
listening. Yeah, that's great. That's
good
great.
shake. That
Wonderful.
was me. It's you know what? It's the British accent that just makes me
Yeah.
feel official. So
Your bow tie makes me feel official.
yeah, I noticed I went relaxed today and I untied it. So yeah.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. Your hosts were Chris Stevens and Andrew Brasich. Edited by yours truly, Stuart Herringer.